What does it mean to be a Western yogi? How can someone who was born and raised in the West, who comes from a Judeo-Christian background, practice yoga and meditation in an authentic and genuine way? My name is Christopher Sartain, and this is the Western Yoga Podcast. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Western Yoga Podcast. Today, I'm sharing with you a talk that I gave at Ryan Kurzak's online retreat that we did a couple weeks back, where I discussed perseverance and resilience on the spiritual path, and I questioned some of the Buddha's wisdom, and I challenged some of those paradigms regarding how we treat suffering in life and on the spiritual path in general. So I hope you enjoy that talk. I deleted the last podcast that I had posted because a couple of people pointed out to me that I sounded a bit harsh or judgmental, talking about some of the yoga influencers on Instagram and some of the things that they do to attract attention and followers that I strongly disagree with. But it is true that I was a bit judgmental and I sounded a bit, you know, self-righteous. I'm certainly far from perfect and I have my own hang-ups and stuff, so I certainly don't want to hurt anyone's feelings and all that. So I thought it would be better just to delete that episode and move on. I will discuss that theme again, yoga on Instagram, but from a slightly different perspective in a future episode. So I hope you enjoy this talk about perseverance and resilience and challenging some of the ideas that we find in Buddhism.
All right, welcome back everyone to our 2 p.m. Session for our June 2023 Kriya Yoga Online Solstice Retreat. Today we have Christopher Sartain. He's the spiritual director for Kriya Yoga Chile Ashram, a 6-acre retreat center in the Andes Mountains of southern Chile. His guru, Origen Davis, is a direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, as many of you are familiar. Chris, I've known for quite a while. He's been a wonderful Kriya Yoga teacher, a good friend, and now he's embarked on a new journey with a breathwork program, which he can tell you a little more about as we get towards the end of this. And he also has a wonderful podcast, the Western Yoga Podcast. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Western Yoga Podcast. And you're probably familiar with him being a guest on the Kriya Yoga Podcast. So today, I'm going to turn it over to Chris. And as I've mentioned in any of the other sessions, if you have questions as we go along, please go ahead and type them into the chat box, and then we'll get as many of those questions to Chris as we can as time permits. So, Chris, it's all yours. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ryan, for having me and including me in another online retreat here. Happy to be with you all today. Today I'll be speaking on the theme of perseverance and resilience, both in life and on the spiritual path. I'd like to start by defining the words perseverance and resilience. Our spiritual teacher, Origen Davis, liked to begin some of his discussions or writings with the definitions of the terms that he would be using. I've always found that useful as well. Perseverance is defined as persistence in doing something despite difficulty or delay in achieving success. So perseverance is persistence in doing something despite difficulty or delay in achieving success. And persistence is defined as the capacity to withstand or to recover quickly from difficulties. So resilience is the capacity to withstand or to recover quickly from difficulties. And so the reason I decided to discuss perseverance and resilience with you all today is because for the last year and a half of my life, I've gone through a lot of challenges and obstacles. And so I've had to learn firsthand, learn the hard way about the importance of perseverance and resilience. About a year and a half ago, maybe a little more than that, I had a snowboarding accident and I injured my neck and got two herniated discs in my neck, fairly severe injury, which also caused some nerve damage in my arms and hands. I'm still dealing with it even now. At some point, we'll have to have surgery. And that was a major challenge for me because I live way out in the country, in the mountains, on kind of a homestead. And I was very used to doing a lot of outside work all day, every day. And so this injury prevented me from doing a lot of the things that I needed to do on a daily basis. This was very frustrating for me. It also made it more difficult to type. Still to this day, I can only type for about 20, 30 minutes before my hands go numb. I'm an author, I've written several books. And so I've had to put that on hold for some time. I'm also a musician, I play guitar. And likewise, it's become increasingly difficult to, well, not increasingly difficult, it's gotten better actually. I have improved quite a bit. But the first 6 months were very challenging. And it has gotten better, has improved with physical therapy and whatnot. After that, we had some issues with some of the neighbors here. I won't bore you with all the details, but it was fighting over the limits of our property and stuff like that, still going on. And then about a couple months later, the guy that owns the adjacent property to us decided to put up a giant cell phone tower about 100 yards away from our house without telling anyone. And he had signed the contract about a year prior and had known about it, but failed to inform the neighbors here. So one day trucks show up and start building a road right next to our property. And about a month later, we had a giant cell phone tower and it really affected our view here. And so that was another challenge that we were still dealing with the cell phone company and going back and forth. And anyway, and then, oh gosh, so many little things happened. I won't bore you with all the details. And then when I thought that dark cloud had lifted and all was well, a few months ago, I was in a terrible car accident and almost totaled our truck and badly injured my hip and had difficulty walking and getting around for a while. And and on top of that, we had a lot of financial distress. The COVID lockdowns here in Chile were very strict and brutal, really, and lasted for about 2 years and just kind of leveled the economy here that was already faltering. And so we went through a lot of financial stress as well, to the point that we thought we were going to have to sell our retreat center here. And so we went through a lot of financial stress as well. And so the last year and a half of my life has been very, it sucked. kind of sucked, yeah? But now I feel like things are in a much better place. And I've been able to reflect a lot over this last year and a half about life's journey, about the spiritual path, about the purpose of being here and what we're actually doing here, why we're here, why we are incarnated here during this particular era within these Homo sapiens sapien forms on this particular planet. And what's really going on here? What we're really doing here? And it's not what I thought before all these things happened. And so actually, I've been able to gain some great insights and revelations and realizations based upon all of this suffering. And so, of course, when it was going on, when I was going through it, it was hard. But now, being on the other side of it, I've been able to do a lot of reflection and introspection. And I was able to really gain a lot from it. And I've gained a lot of useful, practical insights into life and into the spiritual path. And so I want to talk about perseverance and resilience. As the purpose for being here, incarnated on this planet. I'll explain. In the Native American tradition, especially in the Western states and in North America and in the Western states, exists the ritual or practice known as the Vision Quest. Perhaps some of you are familiar with it. Maybe some of you have even participated in a Vision Quest. They're still offered even today. Where I used to live in Crestone, Colorado, they still practice Vision Quests. That's a popular thing for spiritual seekers to do. And can be very, very useful. As a matter of fact, the San Luis Valley, where Crestone, Colorado is, the ancestral Puebloan people there will tell you that the San Luis Valley was never actually populated. There were never any permanent settlements there. And that actually that valley, that's where Mount Blanca is and Great Sand Dunes National Park. Maybe some of you have been there. That area was used only for the purposes of vision quests and hunting grounds, but primarily for vision quests. And so it's sort of a power place for the local Native American tribes there, the Hopi, the ancestral Puebloan. And it's a very powerful place energetically. And they still offer, people still do vision quests there. And so typically for a vision quest, of course, it depends on the tradition and whatnot, but typically someone will go off on their own alone, and they will have to stay within a predetermined space, usually just, you know, a few feet radius, and they can't leave that space for several days. Usually they don't eat, they fast, and they just drink water, usually for a few days. And typically they won't have a tent or any shelter or anything. They just sleep under the stars. And the idea is to spend this time alone, in silence, in nature, by yourself, in order to experience hardship on purpose. To go through some challenges, to face some obstacles, to suffer on purpose, intentionally, for several days. With the hope or the expectation that one will gain some useful, meaningful insights from the experience. will have some type of realization or revelation or insight or vision, as it were. Through the hardship, through the challenge, through the suffering, one can gain useful insights into life, into their spiritual journey. And this is the ritual or tradition within the Native American community in North America, at least in the Western states. I'm sure it exists in other parts of the world. This is sort of an initiation ritual within these Native American traditions. And it's oftentimes it's used as a sort of rite of passage for youngsters as they enter young adulthood and have gone through puberty and whatnot. They will do this vision quest as a sort of rite of passage, an initiation, as it were. And so this isn't the same kind of initiation that we experience in the Kriya Yoga path, for example. It's a different kind of initiation. And in other traditions, and in other initiation ceremonies, typically there is some period of hardship, some challenge that must be overcome. I have come to see throughout all these experiences that I've had with suffering and watching others suffer and all this, I've come to see our life. I've come to see this incarnation here on this planet as a grand vision quest. And so this ritual, this rite of passage, this initiation ritual within the Native American tradition of the vision quest that lasts for a few days, I've come to see as sort of a microcosm of the grander macrocosm that is our entire life, that is the entire incarnation here on this planet, inside this form during this particular age in which we find ourselves. In other words, I think we come here to experience the challenges, to experience the hardships, to experience the obstacles, to experience the suffering, as a means to an end, which is evolution, which is growth, which is awakening. And so this entire incarnation, the decades that we spend here, the whole thing is just a giant vision quest. Now, whether or not we do this consciously, by choice, I don't know. In other words, in the Native American tradition, obviously you choose to do that, or at least your tribe chooses it for you. Now, I'm not 100% sure of all that, but I can say that I think that is why we're here. To suffer. This differs greatly and radically from the Buddhist tradition, for example. And the Buddha, of course, taught that the purpose or the meaning of this life is to escape suffering and to experience what is known in the Buddhist tradition as nirvana, which is a perfect, permanent peace. A state of permanent, perfect peace that one can experience if they just meditate enough. Eventually, and I used to really believe this, you know, if we just meditate enough and we just do our spiritual practice every day, at some point, we will experience a permanent, perfect peace. If that were the case, what a bizarre place for us to incarnate to experience perfect peace. No? If that was the point of all of this, to experience a perfect, permanent state of lasting peace and tranquility and serenity. What a strange, what a bizarre place to try and do that in. Now, the Buddha and many traditions are operating within a one planet paradigm. What do I mean by that? If this were the only planet in which to incarnate, perhaps that would make sense. As we know, there are billions or trillions of planets in the universe. We're discovering now that many of them are quite inhabitable and probably have life forms, perhaps intelligent life forms. I'd say it's highly likely, given all that we now know. Likewise, there are many refined astral planes and causal planes in which it is far easier to experience states of lasting peace and tranquility and serenity. But that's not why you came here, you see. So there are many other places in which one can incarnate and experience peace and tranquility and serenity far more easily than this particular planet inside this particular form during this particular age. And so what all of this intense suffering did for me over the last year and a half was rid me of any notions or expectations of experiencing permanent and lasting peace here. And to be perfectly honest, that's fine. It doesn't bother me a bit because I no longer see suffering as something negative to be avoided or escaped. There are species on this planet that have not changed for millions of years. They have not evolved at all for millions of years because their environment has not changed for millions of years. They have not had to overcome any obstacles or challenges, and therefore they have not evolved. Their phenotype and genotype is exactly as it was millions of years ago. Suffering, you see, is a prerequisite for evolution. Suffering is a prerequisite for change. Suffering is a prerequisite for growth. Without obstacles, without challenges, there's no need to change. There's no need to evolve. And there's no need to grow. And so that actually, when we view suffering from this point of view and this perspective, it loses all of its negativity, all of its negative connotations. Actually, suffering is quite useful and practical for us on the spiritual path because it forces us to change. It forces us to grow. It forces us to evolve. Without it, not much happens. I'm sure many of you have known some people in your life that seemingly have perfect lives. Of course, that's our perspective from the outside. I'm sure there's some things going on that we don't know anything about. But I'm sure we've met folks along the way that seemingly have very comfortable lives. Everything always seems to go their way. But some of these people still sort of act and behave as they did when they were 20 years old, even when they're in their 50s, 60s, 70s, because they've never evolved, they've never grown. And we're not being judgmental here, it's just an observation that sometimes comfort isn't all that useful for us on our spiritual journey. And so sometimes we hear spiritual teachers talking about the efficacy of getting out of our comfort zones. Why? Why is that? Because not a whole lot happens when we're stuck inside our comfort zone. Not a lot of evolution and growth and change is occurring internally. When we're comfortable. And so suffering or challenges or obstacles forces us out of our comfort zone. And we have no choice but to grow, but to evolve. A vision quest, for example, we do this intentionally, don't we? We leave our comfort zone intentionally for a few days and experience a lot of hardship and suffering and challenges and obstacles intentionally, with the purpose, the stated goal, of experiencing some type of insight, realization, revelation through the hardship, through the suffering, through the obstacles, through the challenges. And so what I'm proposing is that we be willing to question our sort of spiritual default mode. And to consider other paradigms. What if there were millions of planets on which to incarnate? What if each planet specializes in something? In the tradition of Kriya Yoga and in other spiritual traditions, oftentimes we will use the analogy that the universe or this world of form, Maya, is a school. And of course, there's much that is hidden within language, isn't there? It's interesting the similarity, for example, between the words universe and university. Isn't that interesting? It's also interesting that there's only one letter of difference in between the words meditation and medication. There's so much hidden in the language, occult, esoteric secrets. What if, we're just doing a thought experiment here. What if each planet serves as a school that specializes in something in particular? For example, if I want to be an engineer, I'm not going to attend an art school. Likewise, if I wish to be an artist, I probably won't go to MIT. Or an engineering school or technology school. In other words, what if each planet specialized in something in particular, and each planet served as a school with a particular emphasis? Perhaps there are other dimensions or other planes of existence, the so-called astral planes or causal planes, that likewise specialize in particular fields of study. So I'm asking you to shift and broaden your perspective from this one planet paradigm that we've been working with and begin to consider the fact that there may be billions of planets and planes and dimensions, each one specializing in a particular field of study. Maybe this planet during this particular age within this Homo sapiens sapien form, what if the specialization here was to graduate with a degree in perseverance and resilience? Maybe that's the specialization of this particular planet during this particular age within this particular form. Maybe the specialization here isn't perfect peace and serenity. Now, we are multidimensional beings, interdimensional beings that exist within a multidimensional framework and therefore have access to all dimensions of reality, here and now. But what if this planet were designed with that in mind? What if the primary lesson or the primary class or the primary field of study on this particular planet during this particular age within this particular form is the lesson or class of perseverance and resilience? And rather than escaping suffering, that actually we're here to learn how to tolerate it. Instead of escaping suffering, as we are taught in many of the Eastern traditions, what if instead we are here to learn how to tolerate suffering, to persevere, to get through it, to push through it, to get tougher, to be more resilient? What if that's the primary lesson here? This has been my experience and my insight over the last year and a half or so. You see, nirvana is always happening. You, the real you, not this personality character that you're playing, the real you is always in nirvana. You're in nirvana right now. I'm in nirvana right now. It's always happening. In the background, it's always there. You don't have to do anything or go anywhere to experience nirvana. You're experiencing nirvana right now. Nirvana is always there. It will always be there. It has always been there. And your true self, with a capital S, is always in a state of permanent, perfect peace. This is true. This will always be true. This has always been true. What I am implying is that perhaps in the more refined astral causal realms, it is far easier to experience that nirvana. And that on this planet, during this age, inside this form, it's a little trickier. And that's okay. Because what if that's not the primary specialization of this particular school? What if the specialization in this school is perseverance, is resilience, is learning how to tolerate hardship, as we do in a vision quest. So that evolution occurs, so that growth occurs. And so, if you want to work on perseverance and resilience, I don't recommend. By the way, we're not talking here about trying to attract more suffering into our lives or trying to suffer, you know, more. Let's not go overboard here, okay? All the spiritual practices that we do, our daily sadhana and all that, of course, greatly lessens our suffering. We should be super grateful for that. But if you want to learn more about perseverance and resilience, you can take yourself out of your comfort zone and put yourself into certain situations intentionally to toughen up. One way of doing this that's quite trendy right now is cold water therapy. We offer this here at our retreat center. We have a mountain creek that is comes from underground subterranean water and snow melt. It's cold, very cold, extremely cold. And so sometimes when groups come here, we will engage in this practice of cold water therapy. Perhaps some of you are familiar with the Wim Hof method. You don't have to do all that fancy breathing stuff, by the way, to activate your sympathetic nervous system before you get in the cold water. As soon as you get in the cold water, I assure you, your sympathetic nervous system will activate. But yeah, spend a few minutes each day if you want, or a couple times a week, intentionally submerging yourself in cold water and learn how to tolerate it. Toughen up. Get through it. Persevere. Become more resilient. Also, in any activity that you can do that takes you out of your comfort zone, I highly recommend to do it. Perhaps you're a very introverted person like myself, and you don't do so well in social situations, or you don't feel very comfortable in social situations. Put yourself in those situations. Get through it. Toughen up. Be more resilient. Persevere. Anything that takes you out of your comfort zone or challenges you can be very good for you. I recommend to do something hard every day. For me, that is a pretty intense pranayama breathwork practice that I do in the morning, and meditation and all that. I've been meditating for years, seriously for about 15 years. And it's still, my ego still resists it to this day. And so this is still something that I have to kind of force myself to do every morning. Now, once I get into the flow, and after I've done my pranayama routine and the other techniques that I use, once I'm in that state of stillness and tranquility, I'm very grateful that I forced myself to do it. But it still requires a little push. Anything, any kind of hard exercise, you know, maybe a high intensity interval training, CrossFit, any of these, you know, hardcore exercise routines, if it's compatible with your constitution, can be very good for you. You know, Mr. Davis used to say, you know, if I was being a little less than motivated, shall we say, he would say, you know, we don't want any lazy yogis here, you know. So motivate yourself. And he would always tell us, you know, I'm self-motivated. And he was self-motivated. He used to go swimming a lot and lifted weights and all these things into his 80s. Did some yoga asana routine and stuff like that. Yoga, by the way, can also be great for getting you out of your comfort zone. In the yoga, the asana practice, we often talk about finding your edge. When you find your edge in a posture, that means that you've pushed yourself to your limit, but not past it. And so if we go past our edge, we might feel pain, or we might even injure ourselves. So that's not good. But if we don't find our edge, then we're not really pushing ourselves to that limit. And we're not creating more resilience. We're not creating the capacity to persevere or to tolerate pain. But when we find our edge, when it's just enough pain to make us uncomfortable, but not injure ourselves, that can be really, really good for you. And I would challenge you to find your edge in life also. So not just in a yoga posture, not just when you're on your mat practicing yoga postures. Push yourself to your limit in life. Find your edge. Not to the point where you're going to cause yourself pain or injury, but push yourself to that point, to that edge where it's slightly painful, but you can tolerate it and learn to tolerate it. Learn to tolerate the suffering. And don't view suffering through your mental filters as something negative, because it's not. It is an opportunity for growth. It is an opportunity for evolution. It is an opportunity for awakening. Every time we suffer, it is an opportunity. So I think I'll leave it there. Open it up for questions if there are any. Thank you for tolerating my talk today.
All right. Thank you for that inspiring talk, Chris. So we'll open this up for questions here. And I'm glad you tackled this problem, because I decided that when I do retreats now, when I take questions, I've decided that I'm not going to answer philosophical questions, because the one I always get is, why is there suffering in the world? So now I have your talk to refer to. So if you have questions, go ahead and type them in the chat box, and we'll field them on over to Chris. And let's see. So none so far, but one has been sent directly to me. Let's see. Okay. So the question is, what are we supposed to do, though, during those times? Let's see. What are we supposed to do during those times when the suffering seems unbearable, or we really don't feel that we can handle it?
If you're still here, that means you handled it, doesn't it? You got through it. Look, I tell people, if you're not a raging alcoholic, if you're not a drug addict, you know, if you're not in a mental institution, you haven't killed yourself and all that, and you're doing pretty good. You know, take time to pat yourself on the back too. You know, if you make it through tragedies, traumas, and hard times, that means you have the capacity to tolerate far more than you're willing to admit to yourself already. You're doing great. And so, yeah, I've been there, believe me. I know Ryan has gone through some similar trials and tribulations and all that. We all do, you know. But we need to rid ourselves of this notion that, oh yeah, if I just keep meditating every day, I'm going to have this perfect life. It's not true. It doesn't work like that. But we can learn how to be more resilient, and we can learn how to persevere and get through these situations with less and less suffering and heartache and all these things over time. And so you build up this tolerance and you build up this resilience. That's why something like, you know, challenging yoga practice daily, or cold water therapy daily, or a challenging breathwork practice, these things can be really good for you, you know, to learn how to build up that tolerance, to learn how to build up that resilience, so that when you do come, when these negative experiences do occur in your life, you're more resilient. And you don't suffer as much or for as long.
All right, good. The next question we have here is so wonderful perspective, Chris. Thank you. So do you think peace is like a feeling, emotion, and or thought? Does it come and go too or as well?
Peace is always there. Your higher self, your true self, your Atman, your true nature is always in perfect peace. That will never change. That has never changed. That will always be the case. Now, during periods of superconsciousness and samadhi, we can experience that a little more clearly and concretely for a period. But then, we typically come back down and re-identify with the so-called false self again and get back on the roller coaster. But in my daily meditation practice, I experience periods of really intense, beautiful peace and serenity almost daily. And so you can do that. The problem is you got to stand up after your practice and go back out there and live your life, you know. But that peace is always there. You're always in perfect peace. You, the real you.
Okay, well, let's look at the next question. So thank you for sharing your experiences. To bridge the prior presentation with yours, it seems that on a level that we cannot comprehend, we choose to incarnate / place ourselves in situations and environments that we find challenging, traumatic, for the sole purpose of resolving past karma, evolution, and self-realization. Is this accurate?
We have to be careful with the word choose. I had an experience, sort of a mystical experience, one time actually here, meditating by the creek here, about 7 years ago, 8 years ago, right after we'd bought the property. And I actually remembered you have to be careful with the word choose. I remembered being attracted to it. I remembered being in the pre-birth state, sort of in this astral realm. And it was this pre-birth realm or state. And I remember seeing my parents and my sister. And being attracted to them. And then I remembered, some of you may find this hard to believe, but I remembered my astral DNA wrapping itself around the physical DNA during the moment of conception. And then being my astral DNA wrapping itself around the physical DNA of this person here during the moment of my conception, and I would explain it as being attracted. So I don't know that we choose. I would say it's just the laws of cause and effect in play, and that we are attracted into compatible situations based upon our particular karmic load.
Good. That's a great answer. Thank you. And if you started a book with that kind of story, you'd have a bestseller on your hands. So that's your next one. Next question. Do you think a lower or higher level of suffering indicates a person's level of spiritual maturity? Someone further along can either handle more or have less to work through.
I think the more spiritually mature we are, the more our perspective on suffering changes over time. So I think when we're sort of spiritually immature, we tend to react to suffering in a very negative way. Oh, woe is me, poor little Chris, you know, poor guy having to deal with all this stuff. And as we grow and mature spiritually, I don't think we, when so-called bad things happen or we have these traumatic experiences in life, we tend not to be as, we don't experience as much self-pity. And we just bounce back, just get through it. You push through. There's no other way. What else are you gonna do? Sit around belly aching, you know, and you just, I think with spiritual maturity comes endurance, comes perseverance, comes tolerance, comes resilience. That's what I would say.
Good. It looks like we've got one more question. Again, it was sent to me, so I'll pass it along. But I do want to read some of the other comments here. Thank you for this no-nonsense presentation. Appreciate the clarity. And then, wow, this was so beautiful. Thank you. I wish you, Chris, no more suffering than necessary to graduate from this earth incarnation.
So, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so let's see. Looks like there.
I wish the same for all of you.
Yeah. And another comment, not a question, but good to know that not everyone finds it easy to be persistent with their meditation, and that even an experienced yogi still struggles to have perseverance. It gives encouragement. So that makes good sense. So a few more questions. What to do? This is a short question, so you have to take it as best you hear it. What to do when the body ails from mental suffering? So maybe this is a question about what to do when you feel physically affected by the mental suffering.
Well, of course, we have five koshas or five coverings that cover our soul in the cosmology of yoga: the physical body, anamaya kosha; the energetic body, pranamaya kosha; the mental body, manamaya kosha; the ego, vijnanamaya kosha; and then the bliss body, anandamaya kosha. So we have these five coverings that cover our soul, but they all affect one another. You see, so that if, you know, I'm experiencing physical suffering, for example, that can cause mental suffering and vice versa. Or if I'm experiencing emotional suffering, that can cause physical manifestations of that suffering, so-called, you know, so psychosomatic diseases and whatnot. I mean, that's part of it. And just realizing the connection or the relationship between the mind and the body, between the emotions and the body. What I've been working with a lot lately is my breath. You know, when I was going through all that suffering and everything, the physical pain in my neck and my hands and stuff was so unbearable. At some point, it was very difficult for me to meditate. And so I got really deep into a breathwork practice. And so I've really been working more recently with how we can control our moods, our mental states, our emotional states, the state of our nervous system and everything, just through the breath, just through some pretty simple breathing techniques. And so, you know, I would encourage you just to explore those relationships. You know, there's no magic cure or magic pill or anything, but just explore how you can control your moods, your mental states, your emotional states, your energetic states, the state of your nervous system and all that via your breathing. It's really quite fascinating. But of course, yeah, I mean, when we're suffering on one level, it manifests itself on all the other levels or koshas.
Good. And you also, you know, they could contact you as well to kind of get more information on the breathwork side of things, correct?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. You can, y'all can shoot me an email anytime. You want me to type that in the chat or?
Yeah, go ahead and type it in the chat box for people while I pull up the next question here. So the next question, One of our closest friends committed suicide. How do you feel that act impacts one's rebirth and the time in between experience?
I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. To be honest,
Next question.
I had that one experience of that pre-birth state in the so-called astral realm, but it was very brief and fleeting. And I really have no other memories, to be perfectly honest. I don't have good, concrete, reliable memories of previous lives or the in-between stages between incarnations, to be honest. So.
Okay. Has your experience on suffering made you realize that you have, this is great. Has your experience on suffering made you realize that you have no control and that eventually you have to be okay no matter what happens after grieving for the suffering?
Yeah. You have to accept that there are a lot of things that are outside of your control. That was a big part of it, was a big part of perseverance is acceptance. And just accepting that there are things outside of your control. My God, just look at something like the pandemic. You know, I think we were all affected by that. We had no control over that whatsoever. There are economic forces out of our control, political forces out of our control, astrological forces constantly impacting us that are outside of our control. We just have to accept all that stuff, you know. Now, all you can focus on is those things that you can control. And one thing that you can control very easily is your breath.
Yeah. And another question here. I'll read it. I'm not sure I fully get it. What I understand is that accustoming ourselves to hardship makes us more resilient. I live where people often live on a trap line or spend time in isolation, and yet many have trauma due to residential school experiences. So some suffering may have a saturation point, ?
Not sure I understand the question.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Well, let's go to the next one. Maybe she can clarify while you're answering. So very simple question. What are the types of breath work? Like what can you give some examples of what you might be talking about?
Man, there's a lot of different techniques. Something easy that you can do is something called square breathing, for example, where you inhale for five, you hold the breath for five, you exhale for five, and you hold the breath out again for five. So you just count to five as you inhale, you hold the breath for five, you exhale for five, and you hold the breath out again for five. Just do that for 5 minutes and see how you feel. There's another one. It's like a 4-8 ratio where you just inhale for a count of four, you exhale for a count of eight. And that will, both of these will activate your parasympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for rest and digestion, and will deactivate the sympathetic nervous system. So it's just kind of a way to short circuit your default mode network of your brain and activate the parasympathetic nervous system very easily. You just practice one of these techniques for 5 minutes. I promise you'll understand what I'm talking about. Another one is Nadi Shodhana. I'm sure most of you already know alternate nostril breathing. That can be very good. There's tons of techniques. It would take a whole nother presentation for me to go through all of them. But those are two very, very simple techniques you can try.
Okay. And on your website, I want to make sure I've got the right one here. Is it the kriyayogachile.com or is there another one that might be better for them?
That one's okay for Spanish speakers. And then I have another one that's koshasbook.com that you can check out. That's in English. It's got a link to my books and stuff. If y'all wanted to been interested in my books, my podcast is called the Western Yoga Podcast, and that deals with yoga philosophy, but also I'm really into Christian mysticism, especially the Gospel of Thomas and early Christianity, the Essenes and all that. So I talk about some of those themes also.
Okay, excellent. Let's see. Final question for today. And just before I forget, Chris will be joining us again tomorrow at 8 a.m. Eastern time to lead a 45-minute meditation. And he did post his contact information in the chat box in case you're interested, so you can contact him there. But the final question we have for today is, if people have a history of abuse, especially in childhood, is there a point where outside circumstances decrease resilience with time?
No. You can. I experienced some childhood abuses, and many of us do. You know, you don't need to carry that with you the rest of your life. No. You can move past all that stuff. You can move past anything. Like I said, look, it would be very easy for me, having gone through some of the childhood traumas that I went through, some of the stuff I've gone through in the past couple of years, to just kind of give up. Nobody would care. You know, I could give up, or I could become a drug addict or an alcoholic, or, you know, whatever. It would be very easy to do that for anyone. But if you haven't done that, and you're getting through it, and you're pushing through, it's a sign that you're far stronger than you realize. You are a limitless, infinite spiritual being with infinite potential and infinite strength. Period. You can do anything. Any limits you set for yourself are mental limits that don't actually exist.